Welcome to the Tour Life Podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a touring and session bassist who is also one of my very good friends. He has collaborated and performed with artists such as Bardo, Springtime Carnivore, Jenny Lewis, and Family of Geniuses. You can find him touring with the band Elsinore soon after their October album release. Here is my conversation with the funky and ridiculously charming Adam Wayne. Hi, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing so well on this Saturday afternoon.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. So what have you been up to lately? We haven't actually hung out in a while, so.
Yeah, it's been a minute. I've just been like, you know, as always, just like playing a ton of music. I feel like I'm playing with like a million people at any given point. So it's like, you know, the head's always kind of swimming in it. Like as soon as we get done with this, I have to like go prep for a show this evening. So it's been staying pretty busy on the music front.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you have so we met, let's like take it back a little bit. So we met, where did we meet? We were at like Justin Richard's house. Is that where it was?
Yeah. We were at like wasn't it like an after party for...
Oh, it was
WBZ
it was
or something like that?
Yeah. So that was funny. It was the Vocalo, and like we had like beer and stuff. It was just like a party that we had. Yeah, so that was really random. And then we like ran to each other years later when you were playing with Jenny Lewis.
Yeah.
And then it's all history from there. Cool. I never really asked you kind of like where, like how you got to that point, because that whole time it's like we met and we like, we knew of each other. And then it turns out that, you know, I see you out on the road in like Santa Ana. So what happened between that whole time? Like what happened?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been kind of like playing primarily like in the, you know, like Chicago based for most of my career. And I just like, I got connected, with this artist who is a Chicagoan living in LA, named Greta Morgan, as you know. And I was on tour with, her band Springtime Carnivore. And then, we ended up opening some shows for Jenny and then eventually like playing with Jenny. And, I guess if we're going back before that, like I had kind of done this thing in Chicago in my early 20s where I was like all about like monogamy in terms of playing with a band. Like you focus all your energy on one thing, and that's how you make it successful, or that's how you grow it. But at some point I realized like I don't know how to grow this anymore. And so I started like touring like with other people and just, you know, picking up kind of like freelance stuff, which then led through friends of friends to playing in Springtime Carnivore, which then led to, you know, the Lewis tours and stuff like that. So
that's really cool. And what happened like previous to that? How did you even get into music in the first place?
Yeah. I mean, I'd been playing, I mean, I started in like fifth grade band, you know, like playing trumpet or whatever. And, I hated it. I just like, I was a holy terror in my music department. And then I think it was like around eighth grade for Christmas, I got a bass guitar and a skateboard and my life changed completely. And I was really lucky to have a friend who was like, you know, also 14, who was already just like playing Van Halen licks and stuff like that on guitar. And so I feel like having a friend like that kind of like jet propels you into learning the instrument and like getting good enough at it to be able to like play. And so I just got really obsessed with the bass itself because I didn't know anybody else that was doing it. And I got just like really obsessed with kind of like that becoming my identity, especially like in high school when you're, excuse me, when you're like trying to figure out who the hell you are, and you're not good at sports, and you're not super smart, and you know, you're not in theater, so like you got to carve out your own little niche. And I really gravitated toward bass because no one else was doing it, and I could really make that mine. And then I went to college for music. I went to like just like a state school in Illinois, that literally the music department was based. They were like redoing the music building, so my whole music education I received out of a like a broke down gymnasium that like the college like morphed into a pseudo music building. And then after college, I knew that I wanted to play professionally, and the nearest spot to like start doing that was Chicago. So I moved to Chicago, auditioned for some bands, started playing in, you know, just like some rock bands and stuff like that, and learned very quickly about like the culture and like booking and stuff like that, and how much like, you know, the draw, like how many, you know, how many people do you draw? I'm like, when I was younger, I didn't think about that. I was just like, my friends come out, you know. And then I started a band with a friend of mine, and it was called Minor Characters. And that's where I really like road tested a lot of like theories about, you know, playing shows, making records, touring, like that kind of thing. And then it was that band that eventually I was like, I was kind of like the business person in the band, like pushing things forward, booking shows, you know, planning like marketing strategies and stuff like that. And certainly not alone, but you know, really pushing that. And at some point I just didn't know like how to push the band any further with the information that I had, which is, then I had some friends that were in a band called California Wives. They needed a bass player for like this month and a half tour. And I'd never done that before. And I just like jumped on board and went for it. And then since then, I've basically just been like, you know, if somebody needs a bass player and they're cool people and I can get along with them, and they're not shady and weird, then I'm just like happy to like join in and have fun. And, you know, I love traveling, so it's like touring is like perfect for that. So,
Yeah. So tell me about, I didn't know anything about that first band that you went on tour with. So tell me, how did that tour go?
So like I had done like small tours, like week long endeavors to like South by Southwest and stuff with Minor Characters. And that was just like getting the boys in the van, real like the most DIY, like, you know, you got a show booked in Memphis, and then as you're pulling into Memphis, you find out the show's canceled. So you're just like, all right, I guess we just like hang out in Memphis for the night. And then like, you know, we like get to South by Southwest, which we did several years, and like inevitably there was always like one unofficial showcase that was like complete bullshit and like didn't happen or didn't have a PA or got shut down. And it's like, I thought we were coming down here for like five shows, and it turns out there's like two. And that was just, you know, naturally that's like frustrating, but that's like how it goes sometimes, especially when you're touring at a lower level and you don't have like contracts and guarantees, and you don't have a tour manager that's like, you know, making sure that these shows go through. And if something falls through, then, you know, you find another room to book in or like another bill to sign onto. So that was a real learning, like on the road kind of situation. But the first like bigger tour I ever went on was with that band I mentioned, California Wives, and they were like signed to, I think they were signed to like Vagrant or something like that, and they were just like a little they had like a tiny little bit of buzz at one point, and they got signed at the exact same time as the 1975 to the same label. And like anybody who knows anything about like record labels, they'll sign like a couple bands that sound very similar, and then whichever, you know, artist really starts picking up steam, that's where they funnel their resources. And so we were touring, it was like, you know, East Coast to West Coast back to the Midwest over the course of like a month or a month and a half or something. And it was really cool because it was like my first big long extended tour, and like there was a little bit of label support. We had like a proper tour manager where we got day sheets every day, and that was the first time that I was like, whoa, this is how an organized tour works. And you know, we would be at like the Knitting Factory in New York, and they'd be like, yeah, you didn't have any like liquor on your rider. And I'm like, yeah, but we would really like a bottle of Jameson. And they'd be like, sorry, man. And we like call our manager, and he would put in a call, and then they would just bring us a bottle of Jameson, which felt like so ridiculous at the time. And obviously that comes out of our budget, and like, but like, I didn't know that. I didn't care. I just wanted the Jameson.
Yeah. You think they're taking care of you, and they're like, oh, well, kind of.
Right. You just don't see where that money's coming from. You're just like, it happened. But the tour was really interesting because I didn't know any of these guys before I like joined the band. I didn't really join the band, but you know, going on tour with them. And there were definitely like some serious personality issues in the band. I was kind of like this like quiet guy kind of like in the back of the van, and I tried to not like really engage with some of like the drama that went on, but it really showed me that like if you have people who are like a little erratic or, you know, have a temper, like that can make being in a van for 4 weeks completely unbearable. And but at the same time, like you're going to be on the road with them every single day for the next, you know, 3 weeks. So like you might as well just like either deal with it directly or just let it go. Cause like you're not gonna be around them. You have to deal with it. And so it was like, yeah, it was like a really big challenge. And I remember getting to the end of the tour and you know, like my financial stake in it was like, I just get like 25% of, you know, the guarantees. And then but like we didn't have a contract or anything. So when we got back to Chicago, I was like, okay, so like I kept track of the numbers every night, you know, to make sure that I was taking care of myself. And, yeah, we got back and they were like, oh yeah, after expenses, it's like, you know, $100. And I was like, I just spent a month on the road and I got $100.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really like, it was such an eye-opening moment. And it really hammered home in that moment. It's like, I feel like, your parents say this about like sex, like, if you can't talk about it, you shouldn't be having it. And I feel the same way about money in these professional situations. Like if you can't talk about it, if you don't feel comfortable being upfront about what's the compensation look like, you know, in detail, then like that's on you. Like you need to protect yourself and you got to be thinking about that if money is a part of the motivation for touring, you know. And
well, and people sometimes, you know, they because it's new and it's different and they think it's, you know, it's like this, you know, like pie in the sky, like amazing mm-hmm. thing, right? At first, you kind of overlook things, but then like, doesn't that sound like a bad press? It sets like a bad precedent for like, for musicians as a whole too. Like when a lot of people do that when they're green.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think it does. I think that like, you know, and I've been doing this like professionally at this point, like actually getting paid to do it for like 10 years. And I literally just had to have like, a conversation with a band that I play in now, just like about money, that was just like very direct. And yeah, it's like uncomfortable because no one wants to be like, hey, like, you know, we're all friends. We all love each other, but like, I'm not getting paid what I need to get paid, or I need to be getting paid more because I'm doing more, you know, and just having that conversation. And that's, I feel like that's something really difficult, especially about just it being in a band in general. But like when you go on the road, it really just brings everything to the forefront because you're forced to deal with it 24/7 and there's no escaping it. When you're at home, you can be like, yeah, I have rehearsal today and then I'm not going to see anybody for a week. So you don't have to think about any of that stuff for a week, theoretically. But when you're on the road, it's like every single day. But yeah, I just think that like you are a much more appealing musician and professional to work with if you're just straight up from the get-go and you don't make it weird so other people don't feel weird. And you just get the money stuff out of the way in the beginning, have your agreement, and then you can go have fun on tour. Then you can have fun in, you know, making a record or whatever the endeavor is that you're doing.
So how did you, so obviously through practice, right, through doing it over and over again, you get better at handling those things. But like, did you have any resources that you looked to or and any like previous experience in a different like industry that kind of helped you figure that stuff out?
You know, I had a lot of friends who were working, like really close friends who were at that particular time. And this was, I think, summer of 2013 was the first like big tour that I did. And I had a lot of friends who were working at, the Windisch agency, which is like now obviously Paradigm, but, and so I had like some insight from the booking world and just like, I've always been like a curious person and I just like, you know, I'll ask kind of like what you're doing. Like, I'm just curious about this and I want to know more about it. So I should be like, hey, can we get a drink and talk? And I'd be like, what's your rate? You know, I feel like I've definitely like had conversations, with Macy Taylor, who's also like played with Jenny. And you interviewed him, right?
Yeah. I interviewed him like a couple days ago. Yeah.
Yeah, he spoke highly of the podcast, by the way. I asked him about it.
So good to hear.
Yeah. I utilized my resources. I remember reading like a book right when I like moved to Chicago. It was like a Martin Atkins book called Tour Smart, which is like pretty outdated now. He has a book called Band Smart, which I'm sure it's just like a, you know, everything changes so quickly. Like it's hard to like write a book and then have it be like relevant for any amount of time. But, I don't know. I figured out like ultimately like what I need, to like pay my bills. That's just like what I asked for.
Yeah. And so like you do the research, right? Like you read the books and like now listen to podcasts and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I did because my son wanted to be, you know, he was taking classes at Second City. And yeah. So he wanted to be an actor. Doesn't want to do that anymore. He figured out that the directors and producers have all the power. So he wants to do that instead. But yeah, like I read a bunch of books and like I felt like I could do it. I'm like, you ready to move to LA? Let's go do it. And, you know, he doesn't want to do it anymore. But it's like, but reading and like a book that really helped me was Jenna Fisher. She wrote a book that's called like The Actor's Life. And so like that one, just like hearing her experience really like helped. So yeah, I mean like sitting down with people I think is great. And so when you're doing a lot of travel, you said like you kind of like help out whoever mm-hmm. whoever needs you pretty much. How do you balance that just with like coming home and like, you know, having your family and your friends and like, how do you stay in touch with people?
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's probably like one of the sneaky challenges, of touring is like one, like you don't realize how lonely it is. I mean, you're around people literally constantly, but that doesn't mean like you feel connected to people the way that you would with maybe your family or your partner or whatever. but I think that it's important that you're, if you're touring with any kind of like regularity, if you're touring for like a month at a time, you know, where you're going, like where you have to actually like pay rent on a place that you haven't even stayed in for that month. Like that's like, for me, that's like the indicator that like you're out there and really doing it. And it's like going to impact your relationships. And I think, you know, making sure that first of all, the people around you understand that like you care about them and you're like, whatever, but this is what you're doing now. It's just work and you'll be back. And I think in terms of, if you're like managing like a romantic relationship, or I guess, I don't know, I'm not super close with my family, so maybe people feel this way about their family, but like making an effort daily to be in touch with them, you know, maybe it's, you know, you have a daily call in like mid afternoon or something like that. Cause obviously it's weird. Cause a lot of people are working 9 to 5s, and when you're on tour, you're working like a 5 to 2, you know? So it's like your life is flipped. So figuring out a time to just like get some actually like quality communication time in, I think is really valuable. And then, you know, when you get home, if you have like a day job or something like that, or like a job that like kind of helps you pay the bills between tours and stuff like that, finding a job that allows you to leave is like so crazy valuable. I've been really fortunate, to be working with some of my friends, in the film industry in Chicago that allow me to like, if I need to go out for a month and a half, like I still have my job when I get back, you know, which is really nice. And I think, again, I think it just comes down to like honest, clear communication, regularly.
Did you always know that, or when did you figure it out?
I feel like I learned it through like smaller tours. I was dating like this incredible person who I'm still very close friends with, and she worked in the booking world, and she like even she had a hard time with me being gone for like a weekend or a week or whatever. Because when I was just getting into like touring and doing smaller tours, like it was all fun and games because it was very novel. and I remember her just feeling like a little left out, and like I was living like the best part of my life and she didn't get to be a part of that. And you know, when I would call, I would be like, oh my God, you won't believe what happened. Like, you know, whatever. And then she'd be like, yeah, my day was good too. And like in the moment I was like, oh geez, like cool it, man. I'm just shit. But now I realize as I've gotten a little bit older, like how that comes off. And like, if you're trying to share your life with people, but because you have a job that like forces you to like live it a lot of your life elsewhere, being conscientious of that and like being present to that person is something that it's very much been a trial and error situation, because I've definitely messed it up plenty of times.
Does that make you feel like you kind of have to tone it down though? Because like, I don't know, like is it you know, communication can be difficult because you're like, you don't want to hurt the other person's feelings, basically. Mm-hmm. But like, you do want to be able to be open and just like share and be excited about things. So I don't know. How do you feel about that?
For me personally, like So say we're talking about like a phone call with a partner. You know, you call in from the road. You just had a really good night. You're in New York City and you didn't go to bed until 6 a.m. and it was just super fun. And you met a bunch of new people, did karaoke, ended up in some weird bar at 5 a.m. that you had to walk through a cooler door to get there. And it's wild, right? If I call my partner the next day, I'm immediately going to ask like, how are you? How's your day? Like, just make sure that person knows like, I'm there for them, and like I can't be there with them physically, but I can be there with them intentionally and energetically. And if they want to hear about my wild night and they ask, I'm happy to share, but I'm not trying to like lead with like, oh my God, you totally missed out, you know, because FOMO is real, man.
Oh, it definitely is. And so with like your, like any previous relationships or even friendships, like, did you find that they had like they assumed that what you were doing was a certain thing like that and like, you know, didn't really realize it was a job? And then like, how did other people see what you did versus what you saw as reality?
Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions about touring is like I didn't like take a vacation for like 7 years at one point, because anytime, like if I was working a day job and I needed to like use my like vacation time or whatever, I would save that up to go on tour. And like people are like, oh man, you traveling all over the place. Like, how do you say you're not going on vacation? Like, if you only knew what touring was like, you'll realize that like literally I'm in a vehicle of some sort for the bulk of the day. And then I show up to a city and I, you know, show up to a club or a theater or whatever it is, and it's dark and it probably smells a little bit like mildew, even the nicest places. And like, it's a very regimented schedule. Like fun time, quote unquote, doesn't like start until after the show, you know, after you play your set. And even then you still have to like load out and then park. And if you are going to go out and have fun, like you have to like park the van somewhere that's safe so that like, or the trailer somewhere that's like safe so that, you know, your stuff doesn't get ripped off. And, I think, yeah, like the other thing is like, oh man, you've been to New York so many times. I've never been to Central Park. Like, I've never been to Central Park. The number of times I've been to New York, I've never been to Central Park. And it's because, like, every time I go to New York, it's like, you go directly to a venue, do your thing, and you either maybe go out for a little bit afterwards, or you go back to your hotel. It's not like, I'm not out sightseeing. I'm not out, like, you know, living this lavish life. It's literally like, this is your schedule, stick to it. Don't wake up too late because you got to make that long drive. And I think, yeah, sometimes people see photos of like, I don't know, maybe like taking a dip in some hot springs in Montana, but they don't realize that like that's like a 3-hour break in the middle of like a 16-hour drive. And then at the end of that drive, you just end up at a dark club.
Yeah, it definitely, yeah. I mean, that's not at all. I mean, before I met anybody who toured, you know, it's like, you're like, how can you not be having fun? Like you're all over the place. You're seeing so many things. Like I guess you see it from like the audience perspective, right? And so you're like, you get to enjoy it. And, but like, it's not. And now that I know more about it and I've been in it more, it's like, I, even when I go to like a show just for fun, it's like, I notice all the people working. I notice like everything that goes into it. Like I notice the audio guys and the techs and like, you know, and it always cracks me up because like, I think what like really like paints the picture for me, it's like when you're at a show and then like, you know, like the monitor engineer shows up like to move a microphone and people like get all excited because they think like the band's about to come on. It's like, no, like there's a bunch of stuff that needs to happen before that even gets there.
Totally. Yeah. And like the funny thing is specifically to that point is like you got a real hurry up and wait operation going on at shows where you like, you know, you're back in the dressing room like ready to go and you just got to wait while some things get figured out or sorted out. You can't, it's not like you can go anywhere. You can't like, okay, I'm going to step out and have a drink for a little bit, or, you know, give me a call when it's time to come back. Cause it's like, especially when it comes to like something like sound check, it's like, you just have to sit around and wait till it's your turn. Which doesn't sound like that bad of a job. And honestly, it's not, but it's also not like blissful fun. And that's not to say that like touring isn't super fun. I love touring and I love like the little adventures that you go on. For example, driving from like Minneapolis to Bellingham, Washington, and you stop in Montana at the Water of the Gods and dip your bones in some hot springs and feel really great about your life for an afternoon. You know, those are like the experiences that really make touring, like I always say, like they make you feel human, because a lot of times you feel like this creature who's just like being schlepped from one place to the other to perform in front of people. And you got to do things to rehumanize once in a while.
Yeah, I hear that. So, so it's probably fun on tour, right? When you get along with everybody, but have you had like situations where like, you know, like you just didn't click, or you know, like you said earlier, where like, you know, maybe the rest of the band wasn't getting along, and like, how do you deal with that so that you're still like in a good mind frame and you can still show up and do the job?
Yeah, man. I kind of said this a minute ago, but like you either like deal with your stuff right up front. If you have a confrontation, you'd be like, hey, I just want to talk to you about this, and really go in trying to have some kind of outcome that is like, you know, something like you can put a band-aid on it. The wound is still there, but like, let's just begin that healing. And those kinds of things are like, it's always like the little things that build up, you know. It's like having a roommate or having like a live-in partner, which just like, it's the little things. It's like, I can't believe you leave your clothes on the floor every day. You're driving me. You know, it's like a lot of it's like that stuff. And then the other option is like, you kind of weigh the balance of like, do I care enough about my relationship with this person to actually go through that and deal with that kind of like confrontation? Or is this someone that I don't want to tour with this person again? It'll be done in 4 days. I'm just going to like step back, show up, play on stage as though we're best friends. And then I'll just like keep my space to myself.
So when you get, home from tour and like, maybe like it wasn't the best overall, like, you know, how does that translate to like your normal life?
I think it really makes me appreciate the bands that I do love playing in, which is like all of the bands that I play in regularly. I adore. I love the people. And the only times I really have those rough ones are kind of like when they're like one-off things. I did this weird like Midwest tour with a punk band, and I never toured with a punk band before. I just wanted to do it. And it was like, they were trying to do like the sex, drugs, and rock and roll thing. But it was like a really embarrassing caricature of it. And as soon as I got home from that, I reached out to one of my friends that I play with in Los Angeles. And I was like, hey, what's coming up? What do we have going on? Cause I just need to like, wash my palate of that and focus on doing the things that I really love. And like I said, like, I'm very fortunate that like everybody that I play with, I absolutely adore. They're super cool, emotionally aware. And I get to make really fun music with those people, which there's not really anything.
Yeah. And then, you said you do some work like in the film industry and stuff with your friends, right? Mm-hmm. So do you think that helps like having like something like outside of music to come home to?
I basically like when I'm at home, I help people get the equipment for like their film projects and stuff like that. So, but something I did, about a year and a half ago, I was just like, I was playing with like just so many groups. It was like rehearsals every night, and then winter hit and I just felt like I needed to do something else with my mind. Like, obviously I'm not going to stop playing music, but I just needed a break. And, I kind of started like messing around with like woodworking, which is like obviously still a very creative act. And I wouldn't use any power tools. I would just like literally just all hand tools. I would make really simple things like a box or whatever. And I would do it, in like my basement studio, and like, I would like watch Mindhunter or something like that, like while I was doing it. And there was something so fulfilling about being able to do something that once you're done with it, you have hopefully a functional artifact of the experience that you just had. Like, at the end of chopping up a bunch of 2x4s, gluing them and screwing them together and staining them, now I have like a record console. That's like a functional thing in my living room. And the thing that I think people often don't see in music is how strange the actual act of making music is. Because like, yeah, like you hit this note and then it creates vibrations in the air. And then where does it go from there? You know, it's like I wrote this song. It's like, where's the song at? Like, I can't see the song. I can't hold the song in my hand. Like, it's kind of like this ethereal thing. It's an experience rather than like an artifact or thing. And having something as like a side hobby, for me, woodworking is really great because I get to exercise a lot of the parts of me that really enjoy music, but I get to do it in a different medium. And I think that has been incredibly invaluable for me and my mental health as a very busy musician.
That's amazing. Yeah. Having something tangible, it's like, because I feel like seeing your hard work and being able to hold it is, you know, it really brings things together. But you're right. It's like with music, it's like, it's a creative thing also, but it's creative in a different way. So do you have any other things? Like, what about like with, I remember at one point you telling me that you surprised yourself because you ran like a really fast mile. And so like, what happened with that?
I've been slacking lately, but, like, especially on tour, like physical health is super important. And I think that, again, when you're doing something that's like really strange, like traveling all over the country, living essentially a nocturnal life, sometimes like you're going to bed when people are going to work. I think it's really important to take care of your body and your physical health, because that obviously lends to your mental health as well. But I think working out is like another example of humanizing, like rehumanizing yourself, like being in touch with your body, making sure that you're taking care of yourself and you're not just like drinking, you know, endlessly every night. Because something else to consider is like part of your compensation when you're on tour is like snacks and alcohol. Every green room has alcohol in it. And don't get me wrong, I love to drink, but like at some point, if that's in your room every night, it's like, oh, that's easy. And then you drink it. And then, you know, 3 weeks goes by and you've literally been, you know, buzzed, drunk, or wasted every night because it was a bunch of free alcohol. And it just becomes a part of the routine. And if you don't remain cognizant of that, you become really unhealthy. And being able to wake up in the morning before your drive and like go run on the treadmill in the hotel, or, you know, go swim some laps in the pool. By the way, I never leave home without my swim trunks, because you never know when you're going to find a body of water or a pool.
Oh, what's that venue that has a pool in the Merriweather? Is it Merriweather?
Yeah, it was, it's Merriweather. They have the pool and they also have masseuses, two masseuses like set up in the back, and they like give you a massage before your show.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I've seen that and that's pretty awesome. So yeah. So swim trunks, find a way to move. Yeah. So, I mean, bass players have like some pretty sick moves. Like, you're pretty funky up on stage. So you gotta keep that going.
Yeah. Gotta make sure that you're well stretched out before, you know, you really get into it. 'Cause you don't want to pull something, and then walk around like a grandpa, you know. No one wants to see a person on stage with a stiff neck, I'll tell you that.
What does that look stretch like? Out. Not like you.
You know, it's just like very robotic, or you just don't move. Actually, I think the guy's name is Mick Mars, from Motley Crue. He's like the guitar player from Motley Crue. And like his spine, like it's like fused together. So literally like the whole top of his body just like moves in one motion. Like he's not able to bend or flex, which sounds incredibly painful and awful. But you end up looking like some kind of like animatronic, you know, Chuck E. Cheese band kind of bass player.
Oh,
I think.
That's amazing. Oh man. So, what about like, what do you eat? I mean, I know it's a lot of diner food and like fast food. If you get lucky, like the person, you know, who's like, who puts in like the, like whoever's in charge, like whoever's tour it is, will put some like good stuff on the rider and stuff or like on the bus. But like, how do you do that? And do you have like a different like routine when you get home from when you're on tour? Or do you sort of find a way to keep it like the same?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to keep to maintain a home routine on the road because everything is constantly changing. And like, even just like the idea of buying groceries on the road is like weird because like, how do you keep things cold while you're in, you know, because on the bus you have like a small refrigerator or, you know, there's a lot more people involved and it's just like, it's just trickier to do. Obviously the larger tours, the easier it is. But something I learned from my friend Greta, who is Springtime Carnivore, and she's also touring with Vampire Weekend right now. Every time we would get to a city, the first thing that we look for is Whole Foods. And we just go to their hot bar. And like, that's what we eat. So that we always know, like, there is some sort of consistency. And it is convenience food, obviously. Like, it's right there. But it's not going to McDonald's. It's not going to Taco Bell. It's like a way of, you know, having a range of choices that are like, for the most part, healthy. And in most major cities, there's a Whole Foods. And if there's not, then the next step is like, where's the local co-op? And then you find the co-op that has like decent food that you can like, you know, buy just enough groceries to like make a sandwich or, you know, get some soup or something like that from there. And then a lot of times that's like, that's the vibe that I end up going with. There are other tours, like I play in a group called Family of Geniuses, and we share members with the band Hello Goodbye. And so we've toured with them, I don't know, 3 or 4 times. And Forrest loves Del Taco. And like, so we'll end up going to like these like fast food places, which, that doesn't, my constitution is not built for that kind of life. Like I just feel like garbage, you know? It's great. I love it. Obviously it tastes good, but, you know, finding an opportunity to like get a green juice or any kind of like vegetables can really be a struggle depending on the type of tour that you're on.
Yeah, the Whole Foods is definitely key. I remember when they opened it in my side of the woods. I was there every day. Now one of my students works there though, so I have to be careful when I buy wine. He's like, oh, I sell my teacher wine. I'm like, well, it's biodynamic, you know, and organic, so it's fine.
That's so good.
Yeah, that's amazing. So tell me, what is like some really great advice that you've gotten from someone, you know, who maybe you would consider maybe like a mentor or something? I don't know. Is there anything that like really resonated with you and really made a difference, like in any aspect, especially in staying sane?
I think I love if you look around the room, this is specifically when you're on tour, if you look around the room and you can't find the asshole in the room, it's probably you.
That's brilliant.
I don't buy that, but I think it's funny. I think probably, especially in terms of like playing music, the best advice I ever got was If in music, you should either be having fun, see it like a Venn diagram, right? You should either be having fun or you should be making money. Hopefully, that middle section of the Venn diagram is large. You're making good money and you're having a lot of fun. But if you're not doing either, if you don't have fun or money, you should really reevaluate what you're doing. Because, like, why are you doing it? And for me, that was huge because I would get kind of like almost like a stubborn loyalty or like an obligation to keep playing with a band or to keep saying yes to tours with certain groups that I didn't really want to tour with. And then at some point you evaluate, it's like, well, I'm not really making enough money on this to like pay my bills and it's not that fun. So like that kind of like that the answer is right there for you. Like maybe don't do it. And I think a lot of people don't have the luxury of being able to say no. And a lot of people just have a hard time saying no. But like, if it's stressing you out more than you're having fun, you better be making some good money. Otherwise, you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah. And so it sounds like, you know, knowing what your goal is, what your priorities are, and like being able to take steps toward that and asking yourself, is this going to take me where I want to go? Or is it just like a random thing, like a random tangent? So what do you take any steps like when you think about that stuff to really make decisions? Like how do you decide? I mean, you said you decide to say no if like it's not really making you happy, but what would you say if it's someone new who like, you know, they're really trying to get in there like and try and stuff? Like when do you know?
When do I know if I should or shouldn't do something? I would say I always assume the best. I always assume that people are going to be awesome and they're going to be ambitious and they're going to want to like do a really good show or record or whatever. And if I don't think that, then I'm probably not even considering playing with them. You know, it's just like, you're not even in the arena at that point. But I think it really comes down to giving people the benefit of the doubt until you get to a point where, again, I'm not having very much fun or I'm not making money doing this. And then I'm just like, I love you. I really, you know, I would love to be there for you, but I gotta go. And oftentimes if I have to like leave a band or whatever, I like to like give them a solution. I try to not be a problem oriented person. I try to be solution based. So there have been times when I've been like, I gotta go, you know, there's this tour opportunity or whatever, or I'm just too busy to be like playing in a group, but I want to introduce you to my friend so-and-so, who's like a really excellent musician and could be a really good fit for the project. And I think that is a way for me to handle what might be perceived as rejection in a really graceful way that still is helpful and maintains a relationship, especially once it's like no longer beneficial for me to be involved with.
Yeah. And I think just in life with any job, regardless of what industry you're in, it's like you have to learn how to manage relationships and how to not burn bridges. So I think that's really great. Mm-hmm. So
I think it's just professional courtesy, right?
Yeah. I love that. So is there anything about, like, do you have like a story from the road that kind of like it illustrates what it's like to be you?
Let's see, do I have a story?
Or maybe something you had to deal with that you didn't expect and, you know, you figured out.
Yeah, I mean, there are always like times when, like, I have stories like on both sides of the spectrum. And, you know, again, like that punk band that I mentioned that I had toured with, they were just kind of like they were like really partying and really being inconsiderate to the people that were like hosting us. And I had like a situation, which this truly is the type of person that I am. It was like a real DIY tour, so we were going to be like crashing at someone's house. And I think this was like in the Quad Cities or something like that. The Illinois Iowa border. And this guy put together this show and then like offered to, you know, put us up for the night. And we were hanging out at the party afterwards, and the other dudes in the band were just like going hard. And I was like, we shouldn't keep this dude out too late. Like, he's offering us a place to stay and like, let's be respectful. And they were just like girl crazy and like whatever. And I was really frustrated by it. And so rather than blowing up or like, you know, causing a confrontation, I just loaded the entire van by myself. And when I was done, I was like, hey guys, I got the van all loaded up. Let's go. And they still didn't want to go. And they got really like weirdly pissed off that like I loaded the van, because I was like forcing them to leave this party. Trust me, this party wasn't going anywhere. And I literally got them all in the van, and they were just like pissed that we were leaving.
Oh, sounds like a situation I've been in, because I've done that before. I'm like, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
But it's so irrational.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, well, I was talking to this girl. I'm like, that girl's blackout drunk. Like, she's not, you're not, there's nothing going to happen there. But then like, I literally had to, while I was driving the van to the super nice dude's house who was putting us up, I literally had to pull the mom move where I stopped the car and I pointed back at everyone and I was like, you don't treat me with disrespect. I'm out here making sure we're all good. I'm out here making sure that our friend Pepe, who's putting us up, that he's not getting taken advantage of. If you guys want to keep this up, I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. You know, like I had to like really like mom them about it. But then, you know, on the flip side, and that's like literally the only time that kind of thing has ever happened. Like everyone else has been incredibly lovely. But another example of, you know, as we were talking about of who I am, is like, if there are amenities being offered, I'm like the middle-aged dad who can't like say no to any amenity. So, you know, like a couple years ago in the summer, when you mentioned Merriweather Post Pavilion, was playing a show with Jenny Lewis, and there was like a juice bar set up there, and I was like, heck yeah, I'm having some juice. I didn't want juice, but I'm like, I'm having juice. And then somebody's like, oh yeah, the masseuse is back here. I'm like, yep, getting a massage. I don't even like massages, Janine.
You're like, I don't like to be touched, but if it's a free massage.
I can't say no. I can't say no. And then after the show, it was like, I don't know, maybe in the low 70s out. And I was like, I'm getting in this pool. And so Brendan, the drummer of that I was playing with, and a dear friend, he and I were just like, all right, the trunks are going on. We're getting in. Can't not swim. It's a beautiful private pool. We did, and we just froze our asses off for like 10 minutes. But by gum, we swam in that damn pool. We took every amenity.
Oh, and it actually reminds me of me every time I'm at a hotel. Like, I love free, like, mini stuff. Like, Soho House has, like, cow shed products. And I'm just like, I need this. And they have, like, full-size lint rollers. I mean, like, come on.
Right.
Come on. Like, I got to have it. I need all those mini, like, sewing kits. I need them.
Totally. I think of it like this. Like, okay, so when you're doing any job and there are amenities offered, that's like a part of your compensation that you're just not capitalizing on. Otherwise, you know, get in that damn pool. Go for a swim. Yeah, it's cold. You'll be all right, but you did it. Get that massage. Have some juice, whatever.
So that would be the advice that you have for people, right?
Man, there's so much out there to just like take for free because people are offering it. I just say, swim in it, baby. Just live in the now and take it all.
Oh, I love that. Oh my gosh. Well, we're out of time. So I thank you so much for chatting with me. It was so nice getting to know you better. You know, I'm here if you need me. You know where to find me.
Next tour, I'm going to be like, Janine. Be like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Like, I got you, Adam. I got you.
After all your research, you're going to know all the tips and tricks. You're going to know all the pieces of advice. You're going to have a hat, right? And it's going to have tour advice from everybody that you interview. And someone reaches out to you, just pull it out like a fortune cookie. And you're like, And then you're gonna be the wise one.
Thanks to you. So, all right. Well, thank you so much again. And I'll talk to you soon. Do you have anything coming up in the next, you know, couple months?
I have a record coming out in October. And the band is called Elsinore. The record is called Life in the 21st Century. And then there will be some touring around that. But the dates haven't been announced yet. But yeah.
Sweet. And I will keep everyone posted on our social media. So, all right, cool. Well, thanks so much. Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Adam Wayne. 1. Do your research and be upfront about money. Don't make it weird. 2. Find time to get some quality communication in with your loved ones. A daily call can make all the difference. 3. Deal with confrontations upfront. You don't want issues to build up and fester. 4. Experimenting with a different creative medium, like woodworking, can be incredibly nourishing to your mental health. And 5, in music, you should either be having fun or making money. Hopefully, you can find a way to do both. And if you're not doing either, you should reevaluate what you're doing. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Make sure you give Adam a follow on Instagram at @AdamWithPictures. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes and to follow us on Instagram @TheTourLife Podcast.